The sun is the engine that runs the weather machine on Earth. The unequal heating of the Earth's surface by the sun is what drives the atmosphere in a continuous motion, never reaching equilibrium, but generating chain reactions which create the variety of weather patterns in which we fly. Every physical process of weather is accompanied by or is the result of a heat exchange. At the equator, 1 square foot of sun's rays is concentrated over 1 square foot of the surface. But as you go either north or south of the equator, 1 square foot of the sun's rays is no longer concentrated on 1 square foot of the surface, but over a larger and larger area as you go toward the poles. This lower concentration of sunlight produces less radiation of heat over a given surface area, therefore less atmospheric heating takes place in that particular area. The unequal heating of the Earth is what causes variations in altimeter settings between weather reporting points. The unequal heating of the Earth's atmosphere also creates wind, because warmer air has a tendency to rise and cooler air has a tendency to settle, replacing the warmer air. Since the sun's rays are more intense over the equator, the air there is heated and it rises, traveling north and south toward the poles. As the air rises from the equator and moves northward, it gets deflected to the east, and by the time it has traveled to about a third of its distance to the pole, the air is no longer traveling northward but eastward because of Coriolis force. This causes a pileup of air in the vicinity of 30 degrees north latitude. This can also be said to be a semi-permanent high-pressure area. Since there's a pileup of air, some of the air is forced downward to the Earth's surface, where part of that air flows southwestward, returning to the equator. Another part of that same air flows northeastward along the surface. In the meantime, a portion of air aloft continues its journey northward, being cooled as it reaches the polar region. As it cools, it begins its return trip back to the equator. On its way down to the equator, it too is deflected to the right by Coriolis force, and creates low-level polar easterlies. A portion of that air at the poles meets with the air that was flowing north from 30 degrees north latitude. So when the air from the poles is traveling south and it meets with the air flowing from 30 degrees north latitude, when the two of them meet, they rise and they form a semi-permanent low-pressure system at around 60 degrees north latitude. That completes the three-celled circulation pattern, with the low over the equator, the high at around 30 degrees north latitude, another low at around 60 degrees north latitude, and the high over the poles. The three cells are characterized by polar easterlies, prevailing westerlies, and easterly trade winds. This neat little three-cell circulation pattern is distorted by the uneven heat exchange caused by the irregular distribution of oceans and continents and by the rotation of the Earth. Coriolis force is the name given to the deflection of air particles to the right in the northern hemisphere. It is named after the French mathematician Gaspard Coriolis and can be seen by drawing a straight line with a piece of chalk from the spindle to the edge of a rotating turntable. When the turntable is stopped, the curved path that the chalk has taken can be seen, yet when the line was originally drawn, it was drawn straight. Lines of equal barometric pressure are called isobars. Closely spaced isobars mean strong winds. Widely spaced isobars means light wind. So, wind is created by high pressure trying to flow toward and into low pressure. And in general terms, the wind patterns of the northern hemisphere can be characterized by clockwise circulation around a high, counterclockwise circulation around a low. The closer the isobars are together, the stronger the wind speed. And surface winds do not exactly parallel the isobars, but move outward from the center toward the high pressure. For example, the wind at 5,000 feet AGL is southwesterly, while the surface wind is southerly. The difference in direction between the southwesterly wind at 5,000 and the southerly surface wind is due to friction between the wind and the surface. The friction slows the wind, and Coriolis force has less effect on slower winds, and so there is less deflection at the surface than at 5,000 AGL. Knowing that air flows out of a high in a clockwise direction and into a low in a counterclockwise direction is useful when you're planning flights. For example, in the northern hemisphere, when traveling from west to east, the most favorable winds can be found by flying north of high pressure areas and south of low pressure areas. Conversely, when flying east to west, the most favorable winds can be found south of high pressure areas and north of low pressure areas. The standard temperature at sea level is 59 degrees Fahrenheit, 15 degrees Celsius. The average decrease in temperature with altitude is 2 degrees Celsius or 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit per 1,000 feet. This is called the standard lapse rate. Since this is an average, the exact value of the lapse rate seldom exists. In fact, temperature sometimes increases with altitude. That's called an inversion. The most frequent type of ground or surface-based temperature inversion is one that is produced by terrestrial radiation on a clear, relatively still night. What I mean by that is when there's little or no wind and it's a clear, calm night, the Earth loses its heat to radiation. The heat that's closer to the surface of the Earth radiates upward. That's why the fog that forms under these conditions is called radiation fog. Air has moisture or water vapor present in it. The water vapor content of the air can be expressed in two different ways: relative humidity and dew point. Relative humidity is the term that relates to the actual water vapor present in the air, or which could be present in the air. Temperature determines, for the most part, how much water vapor air can hold. Warm air can hold more water vapor than cold air. That's why when it's warm, we don't see the condensation of our breath. Air that has 100% relative humidity is said to be saturated. If the air has less than 100% relative humidity, it is called unsaturated air. Dew point is the temperature to which air must be cooled to become saturated. Moisture can be added to the air by either evaporation or sublimation. Moisture is removed from the air by either condensation or sublimation. Sublimation means when water changes state from a solid to a gas or a gas to a solid without going through the liquid stage. When water vapor condenses on large objects, it is called dew. When water vapor condenses on tiny little microscopic particles of salt or dust or combustion byproduct called condensation nuclei, it forms clouds or fog. Relative humidity can be increased either by lowering the air temperature or by increasing the moisture in the air. If the temperature and dew point spread is small and decreasing within 4 degrees Fahrenheit, condensation is likely to occur. If the temperature is above freezing, the weather most likely to develop as a result of a temperature and dew point coming close together would be fog or low clouds. A ridge is an elongated area of high pressure. A trough is an elongated area of low pressure. All fronts lie in troughs. A cold front is the leading edge of an advancing cold air mass. A warm front is the leading edge of an advancing warm air mass. Warm fronts move about half as fast as cold fronts do. Frontal waves and cyclones, or areas of low pressure, usually form on slow-moving cold fronts or stationary fronts. Frontal waves and cyclones, a cyclone is an area of low pressure. Frontal waves and cyclones usually form on slow-moving cold fronts or stationary fronts. The actual physical manifestation of a warm front or a cold front can be different with each particular front. They vary with speed, and they have different characteristics of stability, and the air mass that's being overtaken, the nature of the air mass that's being overtaken, has some effect on the manifestation of each front. For example, a stable air mass that's forced aloft will continue to exhibit stable characteristics, while an unstable air mass forced to ascend will continue to be characterized by those elements which characterize unstable air masses: cumuliform clouds, turbulence, showery precipitation, and good visibility. The passage of a front is indicated by a temperature change, and the temperature change is the most easily recognizable discontinuity when a front passes. Frontal passage is also indicated by a continuous decrease in pressure followed by an increase as the front passes. And frontal passage is characterized by a shift in wind direction, wind speed, or both. The definition of stability is the resistance of the atmosphere to vertical motion. So a stable air mass resists any upward or downward movement, and an unstable atmosphere is just the opposite. It allows itself to move upward or downward, so an air mass that allows itself to go up and cool through expansion is considered unstable. The way stability is determined is by measuring the difference between the actual existing lapse rate of a given parcel of air and compare that to the dry adiabatic lapse rate. Adiabatic is a word that's used regarding weather. Adiabatic cooling is expansional cooling. In other words, have you ever opened a bottle of carbonated beverage and observed a cloud form in the neck of the bottle? When you open a bottle of any carbonated pressurized beverage, often the temperature decreases right after the bottle is opened, and that causes fog to form. It's called expansional cooling. When the pressure inside the bottle went from high pressure to low pressure, as the air inside the bottle expanded, it took away heat, and that caused expansional cooling or adiabatic cooling. You do need to know the characteristics of stable and unstable air. It's very important to know what they are. Let's start with stable air. In terms of clouds, precipitation, turbulence, and visibility, stratiform clouds and fog are found in stable air. Stratiform clouds are layered clouds with very little vertical development. The type of precipitation found in stable air is continuous precipitation as opposed to showery precipitation. Continuous precipitation, smaller water droplets. The air is normally smooth, turbulence is absent, and you have fair to poor visibility in haze and smoke. So the trade-off with flying in stable air is you get really smooth air, but the visibility is not that good, and you have a tendency to run into stratiform clouds and fog. Unstable air, on the other hand, is characterized by cumuliform clouds, clouds with extensive vertical development. And the type of precipitation you find is showery precipitation, which is okay because those showers are isolated. You do have turbulence in rough air, and you have pretty good visibility, except in blowing obstructions and in rain showers. So stable air is characterized by stratiform clouds, continuous precipitation, smooth air, and marginal visibility. Unstable air is characterized by cumuliform clouds, showery precipitation, turbulent air, and fairly good visibilities except in local obstructions to vision like blowing dust or rain showers. The stability of the air determines what type of clouds will be formed, either stratiform clouds or cumuliform clouds. If you take an air mass and you warm it from below, that would decrease the stability of an air mass. So those late afternoon thunderstorms that form as a result of the terrestrial heating all throughout the day is caused by unstable air that's forced upward through heating from below. Clouds are divided into four families according to their height range. There's low clouds, middle clouds, high clouds, and clouds with extensive vertical development. So the first three families of clouds, low, middle, and high, are further classified according to the way they're formed. Clouds that are formed by vertical currents in unstable air are called cumulus clouds, and they have a billowy appearance. Clouds formed by the cooling of a stable air mass are called stratiform clouds or layered clouds, and they are real flat and have a sheet-like appearance. The prefix nimbo or the suffix nimbus means it's a rain cloud. Cumuliform clouds are billowy, stratiform clouds are flat. Steady precipitation, which is small rain droplets, in contrast to showery precipitation preceding a front, is an indication of stratiform clouds with little or no turbulence. High clouds are composed mainly of ice crystals, and they are the least likely to contribute to structural icing. Cumuliform clouds are very interesting clouds because the base of those clouds, which are formed by vertical currents, can be roughly calculated by dividing the difference between the surface temperature and dew point by 4.4 and multiplying the remainder by 1,000. So the convergence of temperature and dew point is 4.4 degrees Fahrenheit per 1,000 feet. So remember when I said when you cool air to its dew point, it becomes saturated? Well, 4.4 degrees per 1,000 feet is the temperature and dew point lapse rates. So if I asked you, what is the approximate base of the cumulus clouds if the surface air temperature is 70 degrees Fahrenheit and the dew point is 48? So you subtract 48 from 70, and you get 22. You divide 22 by 4.4, and you get 5. You multiply 5 times 1,000, and you get 5,000. 5,000 feet would be the base of the clouds, AGL, under the given conditions. Now here's a little twist. What is the approximate base of the cumulus clouds if the surface air temperature at 1,000 feet MSL is 70 degrees Fahrenheit and the dew point is 48? Same problem, except I asked you if the surface temperature at 1,000 feet MSL is 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, you'd add 1,000 feet to the answer, so the answer would be 6,000 feet MSL. Fog is a cloud lower than 50 feet above the ground. Fog is composed either of water droplets or ice crystals. Fog reduces visibility. Fog forms by either cooling the air to its dew point or by adding moisture to the air near the ground. In order for fog to form, you have to have a small temperature dew point spread. If you have a lot of condensation nuclei from combustion products, this makes fog prevalent in industrial areas. Fog is classified by the way it is formed. Advection fog and upslope fog require wind in order to exist. Advection fog, sometimes called sea fog, is formed when warm, moist air is pushed by winds and moves over colder ground or colder water. San Francisco is a good example of world-famous advection fog. Upslope fog is formed when moist, stable air is cooled to its dew point and wind moves the air up sloping terrain. The air is then cooled at the dry adiabatic lapse rate of approximately 3 degrees Celsius per 1,000 feet. Radiation fog, or ground fog, is formed when the sun goes down and when the Earth loses its heat to radiation. You could say that the heat is radiated upward, and this is what cools the ground, which then cools the air in contact with it. When the air is cooled to within a few degrees of its dew point, fog will form. This fog usually forms in warm, moist air over low flatlands on clear, relatively windless nights. Precipitation fog, or rain-induced fog, is most commonly associated with frontal activity and is formed by relatively warm rain falling through cooler air. Evaporation of the precipitation saturates the cool air and fog forms. The reason we're talking about this type of fog is because it occurs in the proximity of precipitation, icing, turbulence, and thunderstorms, all of which are hazards. Steam fog forms in the winter when cold, dry air passes from land areas over comparatively warmer ocean waters. Low-level turbulence can occur, and icing can become hazardous in steam fog. Frost is described as ice deposits formed by sublimation on a surface when the temperature of the collecting surface is at or below the dew point of the adjacent air, and the dew point is below freezing. Frost is dangerous because it causes early airflow separation on the airfoil, and that results in a loss of lift. So all frost should be removed from the wings of an airplane before flight. Just a little bit of frost may prevent the airplane from becoming airborne. Cumulus clouds are formed by convective air currents, or air that's heated from below. Expect turbulence below or inside cumulus clouds, especially towering cumulus clouds. The greatest turbulence can be expected inside cumulonimbus clouds. If severe turbulence is encountered either inside or outside of clouds, the airplane's airspeed should be reduced to maneuvering speed, and you should attempt to maintain a level flight attitude, because any amount of excess load will be decreased if the flight attitude is maintained straight and level. A thunderstorm is all the hazards in flight wrapped up into one package. It contains the most violent weather you could ever expect. Thunderstorms require three things to form: sufficient amount of water vapor, they require an unstable lapse rate, and they require some type of initial lifting action. That could be done by heating from below, that could be done by frontal lifting, cold air cutting underneath a warm air mass, or it could be done by what's called orographic lifting or mechanical lifting, by wind blowing on the upslope side of a mountain. Three stages of a thunderstorm: the cumulus stage, the mature stage, and the dissipating stage. The cumulus stage is characterized by continuous updrafts. The mature stage is characterized by updrafts and downdrafts and precipitation beginning. Thunderstorms reach their greatest intensity during the mature stage. The dissipating stage of the thunderstorm is the last stage, and that's characterized predominantly by downdrafts. If you get precipitation that evaporates before it reaches the ground, that's called virga. What phenomenon is always associated with thunderstorms? Lightning. You also get hail that forms inside of thunderstorms by the constant freezing, melting, and refreezing of water as it's carried up by the updrafts and down by the downdrafts. So you should expect hazardous weather when you're anywhere within 20 nautical miles of a thunderstorm. You should always expect wind shear turbulence when you're flying within 20 nautical miles of a thunderstorm. So thunderstorms should be avoided by at least 20 nautical miles. Thunderstorms that produce the most intense hazard to aircraft are called squall line thunderstorms. These are narrow bands of thunderstorms that often develop ahead of a cold front. Embedded thunderstorms are those thunderstorms that are obscured by massive cloud layers and cannot be seen. Wind shear is defined as a change in wind direction and or speed over a very short distance in the atmosphere. Wind shear can occur at any level of the atmosphere and can be both vertical and horizontal. You can detect wind shear by a sudden change in airspeed. You can expect low-level wind shear during strong temperature inversions on all sides of a thunderstorm and directly below the thunderstorm. You can also expect a wind shear zone in a temperature inversion whenever the wind speed at 2 to 4,000 feet above the surface is at least 25 knots. Low-level wind shear can also be found near frontal activity because winds can be significantly different in the two air masses that meet to form a front. In warm fronts, or warm frontal conditions, the most critical period is before the front passes the airport. Warm front wind shear may exist below 5,000 feet for about 6 hours before the surface passage of the front. Wind shear associated with a warm front is usually more extreme than that found in cold fronts. The shear associated with cold fronts is usually found behind the front. If the front is moving 30 knots or more, the shear zone will be 5,000 feet above the surface 3 hours after frontal passage. The two types of wind shear hazards are either a loss of a headwind or a loss of a tailwind. So a loss of a headwind means the headwind may shear to a calm or tailwind component. When this happens, initially the airspeed decreases, the aircraft pitches down, and altitude decreases. A tailwind may shear to either a calm or to a headwind. The airspeed initially increases, the aircraft pitches up, and altitude increases. Lower than normal power would be required initially, followed by a further decrease as the shear is encountered, and then an increase as the glide slope is regained. Structural icing occurs on an aircraft whenever supercooled water droplets make contact with any part of the aircraft where the surface of the aircraft is also at a temperature below freezing. You need two things in order to have icing. You need to have temperature at or below the freezing level and some form of visible moisture. Icing in rain is pretty important, and it's something to watch out for because it can occur outside of clouds. In other words, you can have structural icing occur while flying in VFR conditions. The problem with freezing rain is that it has the highest accumulation rate. What it indicates is that the temperature at a higher altitude is warmer. The presence of ice pellets at the surface is evidence that there's freezing rain at a higher altitude. The other thing you could look for is wet snow indicates that the temperature at your altitude is above freezing. Anytime you're flying in the vicinity of a front, you have the potential of icing conditions.